This is HPR episode 2821 entitled, Interviewing Some Exhibitors at the 2019 VCFE.org event, and is part of the series, Interviews. It is hosted by Arun Patton, and is about 46 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, I interviewed some of the exhibitors at the recent VCFE.org event in Munich, Germany.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
And hello, everybody, and welcome with another podcast by me, Jeroen Berton. This time, I'm trying something new. I bought myself a toy. To be precise, I bought myself a Zoom H4n Pro. And I just had an old mic laying around, a Shure SM58, I believe. And I thought, well, can't I just do some interviews? I don't know. I've never really done any interviews, so I thought let's give it a try. And since I was anyway at the VCFE in Munich this weekend, and for those unfamiliar with the event, VCFE stands for Vintage Computer Festival Europe, I thought, well, I'm being one of the people exhibiting there. I brought my own AS400 and three TwinX terminals, set it up, and had myself a blast telling people about this completely antiquated and, well, my system is, and completely different computer system from, well, what you're familiar with, probably like Linux and Windows and Apple. Anyway, so I brought my Zoom equipment, my mic, and I thought, well, at some point later in the day, let's just interview a couple of guys. And what you're about to hear is the result. Now, I'm not going to say that it's any good, because I don't think it is. And I'm just rambling, and they're just rambling. And, well, maybe, just maybe, it's you find it entertainment. Or interesting, or fun, or whatever. Sorry. Just do me this one favor. If you think this is by any means interesting, or you have a positive experience, just let me know in the comments, because I'm pretty curious what you think of this well, let's say, first experiment. So without further ado, I'm going to merge in the files that I recorded. Maybe here and there I'll interrupt to clarify stuff, but all in all, well, let's see what happens. So here goes. Okay, so I'm now standing at the VCFE, the Vintage Computer Festival Europe, in München, and I'm standing next to somebody who calls himself Steckschwein. Can you tell me your Steckschwein?
Not actually. The Steckschwein is something I built, or we built, my buddy and me. My name is Thomas Wojnke, and that guy kneeling over there in front of his computer is Marco Lauke, and the Steckschwein is some pretty much a team effort to build a homebrew computer that might have existed in the 80s, so in the heyday of the 8-bit computer era, and so that was the actual goal back then. And since then, a bit of feature creep happened, and I don't think this would be possible back in the 80s. We have a couple of newer components, but yeah.
Okay, so, and what processor did you choose?
It's a 65C02, so we are both Commodore buffs, so we are pretty much into 6502 assembler, so the 6502 was the logical choice for us. Also, it was the only processor we are really fluent in assembler fluent-ish, I might say. So, yeah, why not?
And when you say feature creep, what kind of features? So you, I guess you start with a processor board, but what happens next?
Yeah, you know, we started off with a breadboard, put the 65CO2 on there, and a bit of wiring. We rewired the data bus to a knob instruction and just watched what happens. And we went from there. So we added ROM and added some, let it execute some simple code, and they added RAM and added execute not that much simple code, and so on. We added a serial interface so we could upload code from our from our laptops, and be able to run actual programs then, and yeah, and then stuff just started to happen. Ideas were just started to exist. We added an SD card as mass storage, and other things. We added a video chip. That was something where Marco came in, basically. We started off with a TMS 9929. And we upgraded since then to the V9958, which is the successor of the successor, and is much more capable. Then we have a sound chip, and these are chips which are already from mid to late 80s. So this is slightly slightly after the 8-bit heyday. So I think we have some overshoot here on our goal, but yeah, it's happens to be a pretty awesome 8-bit computer, if I may say so, and it's a lot of fun since then.
Yeah, fun is important, of course.
Yeah.
Do you know maybe of this initiative that I saw on Facebook with a guy that wants to rebuild the Commodore in a way and tries to design new hardware? Have you heard about it?
I'm not sure, since I don't have Facebook, so...
Yeah, it's a hidden group on Facebook, and you need to know about it.
No idea. So,
okay.
There's a lot of people doing stuff with Commodore hardware, so I don't know about this particular one. So.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks a lot for answering these questions.
Thank you for asking me stuff. We like to talk about our stuff. It's on normal days at home. Don't are not full of opportunity of this. So. Thanks.
Yeah, time is always a short factor.
And people who listen to you,
yeah.
Actually.
Well, try it on Hacker Public Radio. People tend to listen there.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe
I
will. Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, so the next stop that I'm making is with this other kind of equipment, and it's called an NSC MCS CPM system.
Yes.
I have no idea what I'm looking at. Who are you?
Yes, my name is Fritz Dotzer. And this letters, NSC means National Semiconductors. So this is the system, a CBM system from the year 80-81.
80-81?
No, 81.
81.
81, yes.
Yeah, not 1881, 1981.
81, yes.
Yeah.
A machine with a Z80 CPU processor system. And floppy disk drive, two floppy disk drive, 8-inch, zoll. Yeah, you understand. Okay.
Yeah, it's an 8-inch floppy drive.
Yes. Yes, here you can see, but you cannot hear. Inside this computer unit are three printed circuit boards are working on a multibus system. So the multibus, maybe you know, multibus comes from Intel. Intel has developed multibus. On this multibus, three hardware are installed. So the first is the processor board. On this processor board, you have CPU, you have the counter, you have the timer, you have two PO parallel boards, and two serial controllers. And there is no RAM on this board, on this processor board, only a 2 kilobyte EEPROM memory, which contains a minimal BIOS system for the system.
And what kind of processor is on that board?
It's a Z80. Z80. Yes, the second board inside, multi-bus board, is a 64K byte RAM memory board. Yeah, this is not a normal RAM, it's a dynamic RAM, must be always refreshed. You know, it's also from this time, 81, and the chips, you see many chips in 16K by 1 bit. So you need 16 factor 4 and then by 8, 4, 8, 32 chips you need for this 64 kilobyte. Yes. And
yeah, looking at a photo, it's a lot of chips.
Yes, a lot of chips, really. Yes. Okay. And last but not least, a board, a floppy controller board. Yes. On this floppy controller board, you can connect to floppies, to an 8-sol floppy or to a 3.5-sol floppy disk.
So 3.5-inch floppy drives and 8-inch floppy drives. You can connect to the floppy controller board. Ah, okay. And what was this system used for? Was it a hobbyist computer or?
This I do not know. What I know is this system was in use until to the year 88. And in 88, I buy this system on a computer market. Yes, for hobbyists. And my thing with this computer was, okay, I know on this computer I have a serial interface where I can read in synchron signals, not asynchron, you know, asynchron, you have always in PC systems, but this system supports the synchron signal. And I use this for satellites, for receiving the satellites telemetry data which coming out on for amateur funk satellites, amateur radio satellites on the frequency 2 meter on 145 megahertz. There is a beacon on the satellite and it sends down in a 400 baud stream by a phase modulation. And this modulation goes through a special hardware. And after this special hardware, the sound is splitted in data and in the clock signal. And these two signals I can bring in my computer and then I can read the information, the telemetry data from the satellite. So this was my first application for this computer. Yes.
Okay, so you're besides being a computer hobbyist, you're also a radio hobbyist.
A radio amateur, yes. My call is Delta Golf 4 November Bravo Echo.
Can you repeat that, please?
Yeah. Delta Golf 4 November Bravo Echo.
Okay, so any radio hobbyist now knows your call sign. Yes. And can look you up.
Yeah, you can look. But I'm not so active. Maybe I was active 20 years ago, now no more. Yes. This was my first application on this machine. And second application, maybe if I start the operating system on this machine, I can also start a Turbo Pascal. Turbo Pascal in one of the first versions. So the Turbo Pascal version is version 2.00b. This is the one of this version.
Turbo Pascal 2.00b. That's really, really, really old.
Yes. And I can also start MBASIC. MBASIC from the year 1977. Yes, really old also, yes. Yes, and on the discs, I buy this system. On the disc, there is also a game for BASIC. It's called Star Trek.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Star Trek. Yeah, I know. Yeah, this is a long time ago.
Only with letters, only, and scroll ups always. Yes, simple game. Yes, yeah.
Well, thank you a lot thank you very much for this small interview, and good luck with your system for the next years.
Yes, I hope maybe I take it in the killer and then no more action.
We will see.
Yeah, we will see. Okay, very good.
Okay, so now I'm at my third booth, and now I'm standing next to what is a S5 Programmiergeräte PG675 and the PG685 under CPM86. I have no clue what this is. So who are you and what am I looking at?
My name is Klaus Loy from Nuremberg, Germany. And you look at Siemens programming units for old S5 PLCs, or SPSs in German.
And what is a PLC?
A PLC is a programmable logic controller for industrial equipment. You can put it in an electrical cabinet, put some wires on it, make a program, load it into it, and then you have a controller for your machine.
Okay, so and you use a Siemens sort of PC to develop programs to upload to a PLC device.
No, I do not this.
I
did this before 20 or 25 years. Now these operating machines are historical, and they are here on the show, so the people can see it, and I can demonstrate how it works. Yes, but otherwise this old stuff is useless.
Today it's useless.
Yes, it's nearly useless. Maybe somebody has an old machine, and then for him maybe it can be useful. But you can do the same also with a PC, with a modern PC, and with an old software. This software on this machine you can run also on a PC. And for the PC you have a converter from the serial port to the PLC, and then you can do it on the PC. This technique is from the late 80s, and in the beginning of the 90s you could use it still, but then you move to PCs.
Yeah, that's late 80s. You say early 80s or late 80s?
Late 80s.
Okay, late 80s, yeah.
Maybe this was 86, this old one, this BG 675, yep. BG programming unit 675. This is the model number. And this one maybe was also very end of the 90s with hard disk. And the other one, the old one, was booted only from the diskette.
It looks to me like a sort of a transportable computer with an old CRT monitor tube. And the lid of the case is also the keyboard with 5.25-inch floppy drives. That's what I see. And very Siemens-like keys, round keys.
Absolutely correct. Very beautiful Siemens keyboards.
Okay, you think they're beautiful, and maybe other people have another opinion on that. I won't go into that. But it's colorful, clearly. So, and you develop on these portable PCs, and then you upload it to an S5 PLC.
Yes, this is right. This is right. For example, I have here a very small program, only with four lines. The first line loads a byte.
One moment.
Please repeat that question. Okay. Okay, you can see here a very small demonstration program on this S5 95 PLC. There is an output byte, it's counting. And in the program you see, I load the output byte, I load a constant number 1, or the constant with the value 1. Mm-hmm. I make an plus F, this means edit, and then transfer it out to the output byte, and so it counts in cyclically. This program runs cyclically.
Simple binary counter.
Yes, okay. It's a very silly program, but for demonstration it's okay. On the other programming unit, moment. This was wrong. There we should see a program in ladder programming language with two contacts in series, input 0.0 and input 0.1. And then if this pause is on, then the output comes also the 1. I can show you here. One switch, the second switch, and the output is 1. You can make here graphical programming. You can do this also on the SM machine, but I show it here. this is ladder programming. Then I can switch this language to logic programming block. Then you can see AND gate, OR gate, and output substitution or whatever. And the third one is STL, structured text. It's just a text language like assembler or so.
And you said you have been programming these systems for 25 years. What kind of applications did you build?
I was in a company for aluminium fabrication. We had made modification on the machines. We was in the Instandhaltung in German, repair, looking for the for problems. And there we used this programming units. And then we have made very small automatic machines for making aluminium parts.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Clear. Well, thank you very much for your time.
No problem. I'm here today and tomorrow.
Yeah, today and tomorrow.
Thank you for the interview.
You're very
welcome.
Have
a nice time.
Okay. Bye.
So here I am again. While I was standing on the VCF with my AS400 and terminals, next to me was a stand called Nemesis, and I have no clue what it is, but I'm now standing next to two of the people of the Nemesis project. So can you introduce yourself, and then let's start with what Nemesis is. Who are you?
Hi, my name is Astrid Jacob. I'm an American living in Munich, and I'm actually a fairly late Nemesis wizard. But I'm a very good friend with the mud god Snake, who's next to me. And basically, many years ago, when I was very sick and had a cold, I asked him to restart this online multi-user dungeon. So, Snake, how about you?
Well, I'm a native Munich, not an American. this game was actually running three times already, as in three phases, and she made me start it up for the second and for the third time. So the first one was at the university, and it was running there for four years, from 90 to 94. And after that, I had it running on the real hardware we have here. And this was basically the original hardware where it was also running at the university.
Yeah, which is a DEC station.
Okay, the company DEC is long gone now. In the meantime, even the company who bought them is gone.
Yeah.
And so this is pretty old hardware, like 30 years now. And the fun to run this on the sense of running this on the old hardware is because of the Vintage Computer Festival. Yeah, that's. But we didn't just want to show the old hardware, we also want to run it. And so this was the idea behind bringing the game here. Normally the game is running on a modern computer, reachable on the internet.
What's the URL?
Nemesis.de. Very simple.
And, actually, we have our own web page. We have a little web client there, but you can still connect there over various classic ways, like using Telnet or TinyFuge, other classic mod clients.
You can play it on almost anything, even on your mobile. Yeah. And even on the AS400, like we have seen.
Yes, because what we did is we basically hijacked one of your AS400s, made you configure the Twisted Pair interface, and you connected to the Nemesis. Let's talk about a little bit about what we have here. So basically, Snake, who is the actual mud god and one of the original admins and programmers of this game, he set up the server running on a DEC station. What model?
It was 3000. The first one was a 3000. It's even slower than this one.
DEC station 3000. And what is it running on now?
5000.
A DEC station 5000. So that's like very, very old hardware. And what we did is that, running this local instance here at the VCFE in Munich, we set up an Ethernet, a little Ethernet network, and we connected a bunch of vintage computers like an SGI Indy, like a little Libretto, like a telecom test computer, stuff like that. And then the guy set up a serial terminal server, and we connected over a serial network a bunch of vintage serial consoles, which Yeah, and terminals, that which is great fun. And all of them are running connections to the server and just showing what it was like back in the day, in the early 90s, with people sitting at the university, maybe in the computer room, on some fancy X terminal or on some fancy computer, or dialing in.
Remotely, like we have done it last year, right? Yeah. We connected one of the terminals over a modem line. Like the very old model, this is over there on the table, with the what's it called in English? The not the modem, the acoustic coupler thing.
Oh, you mean the 300 baud thing? You put the phone on, yeah.
You know, not as modern as a modem, but even older. Yeah. Like you put the
an old acoustic coupler to put a phone line connected to the computer.
And we actually even set up an old telephone so that still had like the handset and everything, and put the handset on this acoustic coupler. And so that was pretty cool. And ran a line across the VCV to show how people would dial in and play over 300 baud.
Yeah, you couldn't really dial with them, but it was a fixed line. But it was the original equipment which you used for that.
And so what we do here is we've done tournaments and competitions so people could win a Nemesis t-shirt from us, just to bring them in, show them the joy of playing the game, which we haven't actually described yet. So would you like
to talk about that? Do we want to describe the game?
Well, let's put it in a nutshell. Nemesis is a text-based multi-user dungeon. No graphics, no pictures, no animations. Only ST art in it, which is actually very pretty. And what you do is you log on, you create a simple character, you start walking around the village, you might pick up some objects, maybe you'll kill a monster, maybe you'll get into trouble, maybe you'll get killed yourself. So basically what somebody said the other day is that this is the predecessor of all these games like World of Warcraft and God knows what, just minus the graphics.
Basically World of Warcraft without pictures. Yeah, without graphics.
Also, to quote another guy in a magazine who once said, this is also a kind of the Minecraft of the early 90s, because you not only get to play this game, but if you finish a certain number of quests, you can ask to become a wizard. You have to take a test. Becoming a wizard means you become a programmer in this game, and then you are permitted to extend this game. You write additional areas or rooms, you write objects, pretty little things, little quests, and so you keep building on it.
That's how it grew so big, because it's thousands and thousands of rooms.
What is it currently so big that you have?
It's big. I don't even know all corners of the game. It's 10,000 of rooms. It's a complete world. It's a complete planet with continents and islands which are connected with ships. And most of the ships have a timetable where you can look on, but there are also ships you can steer yourself. So it's a really complete planet. And then you can imagine how big it is.
And do you have any statistics or numbers on the amount of users that are playing this?
Well, this depends on which time period you're asking. Because it used to be the biggest one in Germany when it was running at the university. When I had to close it, newspapers reported about it.
This was closed down in 1994 by the administration of the university, with all sorts of excuses like using up too much bandwidth, etc., distracting the students. These days, this is what Snake actually told me, that the students learned to do object-oriented programming on it, because the programming language of this MUD is LPC, which is an early version of an object-oriented C dialect named after the inventor, Lars Penser, so that's why it's called LPC.
Yeah, and basically we had the support of the university, of the professor on which computer it was running, and also other responsible persons, but there was only one institution or what administrator or something, which thought it is using too much bandwidth or something like this, which is not correct.
Yeah, it's a game, so it can't be serious.
That was basically probably his idea, but it's not really true. Many people, including myself, learned how to program object oriented.
And these days, how many users do you see?
These days is now much fewer. So most people prefer the graphics with even if
well, who knows? I mean, Hacker Public Radio, they are I believe this recording will be heard by about 5,000 people in a year. So Nemesis.de to run a really old, original, multi-user dungeon game.
Really, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much for this interview. And good luck to with the exhibition.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm with another booth. And this time I'm with Punkte, Linien, Kreise, das grafische Terminal Robotron K8917. I have no clue. There's a system here with Robotron on it. So, who are you and what is the Robotron?
My name is Dirk Karnert. In my hobby time, I work with Robotron computers. And I do some research on these devices, and I try to get them to work, to restore them. And every year I do research on another device. And this year there is the Robotron K8917. It's a terminal device. The device boots as a text terminal, so that you can type something on the keyboard, and what you type on the keyboard is sent to the over the serial line, and what is sent over the serial line to the terminal, it's written on the screen, such as a normal terminal. The special on this terminal is that you can use a graphics mode. There is a special escape sequence on this terminal that switches to graphics mode. Graphics mode is when you are in graphics mode, the first time you have to, the first thing you have to do is that you have to change the configuration of the serial line, because the text mode of the terminal, the alphanumerical mode, works with 7 bits parity, and the graphics mode works with 8 bits and no parity. When you are in graphics mode, you have to search on the documentation of this device what protocol you have to run. In the documentation is written what commands are possible, graphical commands, what bytes you have to the byte sequence you have to send just to get a terminal to work in graphics mode. The first in graphics mode that you have to do is to initialize this mode of the terminal, and all commands are the commands that you use there are described in a standard that is named Graphical Kernel System. It's a standard from the Western world that was adapted to Eastern Germany.
And just out of curiosity, you're researching how to draw graphics on this device, but what is a Robotron?
Perhaps I have to do another way to describe it. Robotron is a computer. It's the major computer manufacturer from the former GDR, from the German Democratic Republic, and Robotron supplied every
GDR. That's what other people would call Eastern Germany.
Eastern Germany, yes. It's Eastern Germany, and Robotron was the major supplier for devices in information technology, computers, controllers, nearly everything that where you have to handle data is from Robotron. There are some manufacturers that were united in something that was called Combinat. So you have a headquarter that is the Combinat Robotron, and this device was produced in Salamelis in Thuringia. That is one.
And when was it produced?
It was produced in the second half of the 80s. I think it's 1988. I have to look at the bottom of the device.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, in Eastern Germany, you had multiple manufacturers of Robotron equipment, but they were combined in what was called a Combinat.
Yes, that's right.
And how many of those manufacturers were there approximately?
I don't know exactly, but I think 10 or 20, something like that. Something like that. You have some manufacturers that that produce computers. Salamelis is produces devices for entering data, Datenerfassungstechnik. So Salamelis produced screen terminals. They produced something that was called Betriebsdaten terminal. So you have such devices that you use when you start your work. You have the device mounted on the wall, and if employees start to work, they register the start of work and register the end of work, or you can
a sort of a time registration system.
Yes, something like that. There are other kind of terminals that were produced in Salamelis. Salamelis was also the supplier for hard disk devices in the GDR and cassette tape devices.
And was there a standard on the processor that was in use or something, or was it all different things?
The mostly used processor was a clone of Z80. The Silox Z80 processor was cloned in GDR and was called U880. And that is the processor that was used in a wide range of devices. This device has exactly that, three Z80 processors. One that drives the terminal itself, one that drives the graphics processor, and the third one is in the keyboard.
Oh, the keyboard has its own processor.
The keyboard has its own processor, yes. And that is the mostly used processor. When you the GDR did a step to 16-bit world, first they stayed on the Silox way. They cloned the Z8000 processor, and I know three different computer systems in the GDR that uses the Z8000 processor. And the later step is to switch to 8086 processor from Intel.
Okay, so and what were these systems used for from Robotron? Everything, or in the office, or in machines?
The simple answer is everything. this special device was used for construction. It was a part of a CAD/CAM system. You have a central computer. You connect the terminal to it to view graphics, to do graphics input. Something like that, but the systems in general were used for office processing, for data management, to control something. Nearly everything where IT systems were used for.
Okay, and the operating system? Was there a standard or chosen or?
There is a wide range of operating systems. The mostly used operating system is a CPM clone called SCP. It's a CPM 2.2 that was adapted to the special hardware. The 16-bit systems used DCP, that was a clone of the MS-DOS operating system, but you have a wide range of special operating systems for special tasks. There is, for instance, UDOS, that was a clone of Psylocke Rio, the Psylocke operating system. You have Unix versions. The Unix system was called MUTOS, Multi-User Time-Sharing Operating System. They used a Unix V7 sources and adapted there to special hardware, to the 16-bit processors, to the Psylocke 8000 processor, and to the 8086-2. And so you can say it's nearly the same range of operating systems that is used in international.
And could everybody buy such a computer in those days? And if yes or no, what did they cost?
This computer, it was nearly impossible to buy it as a private person. As a private person, it was possible to buy a home computer, like this, like the KC85 systems. These KC systems are not Robotron devices. You have a Robotron KC exactly, but there were home computers from the Combinat RFT. That was the Combinat that produces TV sets, radio, something like this.
Okay, so you had your combination of manufacturers, Combinat, for the Robotron computer, and you had also a Combinat with manufacturers for the KC computers for personal use.
Yes, yes. And this Robotron computers, there was a special process for companies that make it possible for companies to buy computers the official way. It was called Bilanzierung. So as a company with some... as a special company, the government says that you are able to buy this computer. It was Planwirtschaft, so that someone from the government... It's simply said, it's more complex, but simply said, someone from the government says you can buy this computer, so the company bought this computer, so may we use it? Perhaps yes, perhaps no, but we can buy it.
Okay, so it started with somebody from the government going to a company and said they were allowed to buy a computer.
You can say it so.
and was it the same for the KC personal computers? Was that also you had to be allowed to buy some?
The first time was the it was restricted. Later time you were able to buy it in the shop. Because first time, the first priority to supply these computers were schools. So the government says computers, you need to have computers in schools just for education. And if there were much computers in education, some computers went to the shops so that a private person can buy this computer.
And any idea what the pricing was in those days?
The pricing of a KC home computer, I personally bought this computer for 2,150 mark of the GDR.
And what would that be compared in today's dollars or euros?
Oh, that's difficult because the mark of the GDR was not convertible. The official it was 1-to-1 to the Western mark, but that was not real. Perhaps 1-to-5, one Western German mark to 5 Eastern German mark, perhaps 1-to-10.
Okay, but let's do this another way. If you were living in Eastern Germany and you wanted to buy this home computer, and you had a salary, of course, would it be half a monthly salary on average, or a full month, or 3 months, or you know, how much pain would it be financially?
The price of the computer, I think it was twice or third.
Es gibt Essen.
Twice or third of the salary of a person.
We're going to do this again. Let's risk it. So what would the price be for a home computer? Okay, let's do this quickly. So how much would it cost in East Germany for somebody to buy this home computer?
I think twice or three times of a salary.
Of a monthly salary?
Of a monthly salary of a person.
That's a lot.
That's a lot, yes. We use the, we call it Jugendweihe, I don't know the English word. The Jugendweihe money of my brother was enough to buy this computer. and another way it would, you have to reserve money for a long time to get this amount to buy this.
Okay, wow. Well, thank you for this interview and many happy hours with your Robotron.
Thanks that I was able to, that you give me the chance to talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Okay.
So that's a wrap for this edition and interviews for the VCFE.org, the Vintage Computer Festival Europe. I did a couple of interviews. I hope you liked them. Just let me know in the comments. I'll put some links to some of those projects in the show notes if you're interested in investigating more into these subjects. And, well, talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.